The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll. And today, the very funny actor, comedian, and good friend of mine, Andy Kindler, is here. He played my bumbling agent, Phil Blank, from the Fill in the Blank talent agency in But I'm Chris Jericho. If you haven't seen it, go on YouTube and check it out. It was a very, very funny show that we did a few years ago. And he's also worked with Ray Romano on Everybody Loves Raymond. He voices one of the main characters on Bob's Burgers. He's also, you've seen him on Midnight. You've seen him on so many shows. You might have seen him on Mark Maron's TV show, Maron. He's one of those guys that's been everywhere, and he is a riot. We're going to talk about all those projects, how Andy got his start in comedy. You're going to dig this interview and the laughs that come with it. He's a funny, funny dude, very nebbishy little guy. But before we jump in with Andy, I got to take care of the sponsors who make it possible for me to do this podcast for you for free for twice a week. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for supporting DDP Yoga and his amazing documentary, The Resurrection of Jake the Snake. I know you know how much I dig DDP Yoga and how much the new DDP Yoga Now app has helped me and how I'm benefiting hugely from it. It's been my mission to get everyone listening to do DDP Yoga because of how great the program has been to me, how much it's helped me. It's saved my pro wrestling career, given me so much longevity and my music career as well. Anything that I was having any issues with, DDP Yoga made my position and my condition better. DDP Yoga also saved, this is very important, Jake the Snake Roberts' life. That's heavy. Saved his life. And you can see that for yourself in the excellent documentary Resurrection of Jake the Snake. Dallas and his crew put it together. And believe me, it's not just a wrestling documentary. It's a great personal story about how Jake, the legendary Jake Roberts, beat his demons, battled back from the brink of death, literally, to reclaim his life and his family. It's a great story. Heartwarming. It'll piss you off and it'll make you happy to be alive. Inspire you. So many people are checking out and digging it, so much so that it's now the sixth highest rated documentary of all time on Netflix. So go watch it now. Be sure to rate it after you watch it. Netflix and chill. And I know that's a sexual innuendo. Everyone's going, hey, don't you know it's a sexual innuendo? I'm making a joke. Why don't you Netflix and chill with your chick with The Resurrection of Jake the Snake? Definitely not the romantic type movie you want, but if you're looking for something riveting, Netflix and chill with The Resurrection of Jake the Snake. I'm telling you, it's a documentary. It's going to take you on a roller coaster ride of emotions. And like I said, going to leave you feeling inspired and ready to take on the world at the end. And once you're fired up to change your own life after seeing Jake Roberts change his, take advantage of this amazing offer that DDP has given to all of you sexy beast Talk is Jericho listeners. 20% off anything you purchase at DDPYoga/Jericho for a limited time. 5, 10, 15, 20% off DDP Yoga. That's 20% off the collector's edition of The Resurrection of Jake the Snake documentary. 20% off anything at DDPYoga.com/Jericho. Go take advantage of it, man. Change your life. Start today. DDPYoga.com/Jericho will make you a better person physically and mentally. Go check it out now. All right, I want to talk a little bit about the events from this weekend. Had a great performance, I think, both nights. Sunday at Battle Zone, Battleground. Was it Battleground? That was it. With the returning Randy Orton, and what a great segment that was. It's interesting to have a highlight reel that late in the show. Eighth on the show, we were like the semi-main event, but it was Randy Orton. He's kind of a big deal. And it's funny, he was like, I don't know if anyone's going to remember me, if anyone's going to cheer. I'm like, dude, you've been out for 9 months. You're a 12-time world champion. People will be happy to see you. And that's exactly what happened. We had some great lines and, you know, he called me Ellen and people were chanting Ellen, which I thought was pretty funny. And the whole Fandango thing. And by the way, I love Fandango. He's doing a great job and him and Tyler Breeze are a great tag team. He's got a great act, very much rejuvenated now. And I never had a problem working with Fandango. The only issue I ever had was the fact it wasn't what Vince and I had agreed on prior to that. But it wasn't. So anyways, Randy made the Fandango comment, which was great. And then of course, made the controversial comment about Brock Lesnar about how he needs 16 or 17 suplexes to take him to Suplex City, but only one RKO to take you to Viperville. No enhancements necessary. And someone asked me, did you know Randy was going to say that? And I was like, yeah, I knew he was going to say it. I wrote it. So there you go. We were trying to think of a line, wanted to address the situation with Brock. So I came up with that line and Randy was great with it. So, you know, you can't just ignore it. The whole world knows about it. You know, it's on ESPN. It's on TMZ. It's all over the news. You got to acknowledge it. And Randy did. So we'll see what happens on SummerSlam with Brock versus Randy. Going to be a great match. I think it's a new kind of a catchphrase. Suplex City versus Viperville. And maybe also hashtag Codebreaker out of nowhere. Speaking of which, I gave Roman Reigns a Codebreaker out of nowhere in the four-way. Couldn't quite pull it off. Lost the match, but it was a great match. Four-ways have a tendency to get a little bit wild and woolly, but it was really, really cool. I think we had a lot of great stuff in there, and it was cool to see Finn Balor go all the way. And you're going to see Finn Balor versus Rollins at SummerSlam. So everyone was bitching about Roman. Roman's getting a big push, and Roman's getting shoved down our throats. Well, there you go. Roman lost in huge fashion to Finn Balor, who I've been hoping to get up on the roster for months and months and months, and I'm glad that he's here. And once again, Roman, I'm telling you guys, people were booing the hell out of him, and then at one point they started chanting Roman. So I'm telling you right now, Roman Reigns will get your respect. He's a hard worker. He's a very good worker. Name the last bad match Roman Reigns had. I bet you can't do that. So, and what a great first night for the new Raw. New stage set. I love the fact that the announce tables were off the floor. Got a little bit different there. Corey Graves being on there was cool. Lillian Garcia was gone. You notice that JoJo was put in her place. All of these little subtle changes equal the tone of the show is that it's different. So everything was kind of updated and changed and differentiated from before. So I think it's a really cool era right now in the WWE. It's a really cool time. And I'm still here, man. I ain't going nowhere. Still killing it. Putting on great matches and having a good time. So there you go. And if you don't like it, then you're all stupid idiots. And by the way, people who wait for me in the airport looking for autographs, I am not going to sign them when I'm coming to and from a WWE event. I'm a heel. I'm a bad guy. Don't take it personally. It's what I do. If I sign your autograph at the airport, you go, oh, he's such a nice guy, and not boo me at the shows. So it's hard enough to stay a heel as it is. So I'm not going to sign your autographs or take pictures with you in the morning at the airport. If you catch me on the street or somewhere where I'm not involved in a wrestling show, I'll be happy to. But when it's WWE related, I am not going to do it. Don't get mad at me. I'm a bad guy. I don't have to sign autographs or take pictures. It's what I do. Okay? And for all of you who go, the fans make you. Exactly. The fans make me, and the fans pay money to see me get beat up and to boo me. That's my motto. I'm sticking with it. I know Andy Kindler would appreciate that. Super funny guy. We had a chance to work together when we did But I'm Chris Jericho, the web series a few years ago. If you haven't seen it, go on YouTube and check it out if you're bored. There's 6 5-minute episodes. No, 10 5-minute episodes, just little nuggets. And Andy was great as my bumbling agent, and he did a great, great job in that. And great job at anything he does. He's a very, very funny guy. Loves Dolph Ziggler's stand-up comedy. He's always going on about Dolph Ziggler's Chipotle routine, which is a joke between the two of us. Andy is a very funny guy. He's gonna get you rolling, and the laughter starts now. So I'm here with, I guess we're technically like old friends, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because we work together.
In the business. We have so many. I have so many acting gigs. It's hard for me to remember
which ones they are.
Do I know Chris Jericho from MacGyver? Do I know him from my many years on what's that show with Mr. French?
Who, Mr. Belvedere?
No, where the two kids were twins, and there was the guy who was the single father.
What show was that? My Two Dads.
Everything should be before. It's before your time.
That's the thing. It's funny though, because there's a guy I know named Dolph Ziggler, and
I know him.
Right?
Yeah, I love him.
And he's a wrestler as well, but he's starting up a stand up career as well.
And he loves comedy. He loves comedy,
but he always talks about how Andy Kindler like sits in the back of the room and like gives advice and tells old stories, and you're kind of like the elder statesman.
Yeah,
of comedy at this point in time.
Well, it's getting older every year, I notice.
But do you feel that? I know when I go back to wrestling sometimes, because I'm one of the last guys from a certain generation, I'm like, they call me the OG now. You're like an OG guy. I don't even know if that's appropriate for this.
Right, right.
But a lot of young people want to come and ask advice and stuff. Are you kind of that guy too?
I also find that I'm doing a thing which I would have never thought I would do, which would be the guy who does offer advice unsolicited.
You just go up to people?
Well, my main piece of advice partly people do think like I'm going to be angry because I do jokes about Fallon or, you know, mm-hmm. to their family, slam them.
Yeah.
But I really like people in general. So not that my anger is a shtick, but my main advice for people when they're starting out is just not to be hard on themselves, because stand-up comedy is like counterintuitive to a lot of art forms. It's like when you're, say, in rock and roll or whatever, you know, when you're in your teens or your early 20s, that could be the best time for your music because it's the combination of rage and what you have to say, but something it comes together perfectly. Not that you can't write later, but for comedy, it's really, except for rare exceptions, it's something you need to do a long time. So like I feel like after 30 years, I'm just getting the hang of it in many ways, and maybe I'm over-exaggerating a little bit, but I really feel that way. So when you see new people, they're almost always like, especially people who move to L.A., they're like, I've been here 5 months. I've been here six months. It's like the worst thing you can do, if you move to L.A., just say, I'm moving here. Don't start a clock on yourself.
Oh, interesting.
You know?
Why would you put so much pressure on yourself?
You're like John Hamm. He put a of course I heard him talk about it, he put a clock on himself, and he actually got it underneath the
like you have a year to make it.
Oh, his was like 5 years, or whatever, and then you go back to St. Louis, or whatever. So
right.
I even think in his case, it was dangerous, but maybe he needed it that time, you know. But in general, you can't go by the external results because it just takes so long, and you can't quit based on. I mean, sometimes people shouldn't be doing comedy. I'm not trying to say. In fact, I changed my mind. Get out, all of you.
So like, you know, as for example, like sometimes back in the days, you'd go to a strip club, for example. You'd see a girl, and it's like you just don't fit the mold of what a stripper is. You're not
right.
Or a wrestler. Like you see a kid who's like 112 pounds, and it's like, dude. You have to look in the mirror and realize this is not going to happen for you.
Yeah, that's true.
Do you see this with comedians as well?
Well, the danger is that you can see it, but you could be wrong. There are friends of mine who are amazing comics, and I didn't necessarily see how amazing they were. And then you see them all of a sudden. It's not like I rooted against them. I just didn't see it happen. And then they all of a sudden, years later, came through. Now, that being said, sometimes you can see somebody and, you know, if I had to make a bet on it. You know, some people you can see, it's not about struggling. They just, you know, they don't – whatever. They approach it in a strange way. But I still wouldn't want to bet on people because you never know.
But you never know what's going to connect and what's not going to connect, though. That's the thing. Like, I remember there was that, like, that guy Emo Phillips or something. Like,
right.
How is that funny?
Right.
But to a certain – you know, to a certain group of people, he was like a genius.
Well, especially if you don't – like, if you saw Emo – like, I love Emo. So, like, if you saw Emo out of context, you go, I don't like this, the weird voice. So it's like a lot of times – and then the other part is that not everything is for everybody, you know? So there's so many different factors. I'm kind of, like, known for pointing out when things are hack, like, even on like, Twitter now.
Right.
So, like, I see things on Twitter that are hacky that I used to talk – like, when people go, said no one ever. That's a Twitter hacky thing now. Or because science, you know, because something.
Yeah.
So – and then it's, like, it's hard to even – people, I think, are afraid to be around me that I'm going to point out something hacky. But this is something, like, that we all did, like, 6 months ago. So it's not even, like – I'm necessarily exempt from it. Or another thing that really bugs me, intellectuals do, is a new thing. The last couple of years, they start out a question with, like you asked me, so what's going on in the field of recycling? I go, so where we are is they start with so, as if this is an ongoing discussion that you guys have had and we're just picking it up. And it's just it drives me crazy. Another one that drives me crazy is intellectuals use sort of instead of you know, like most people when they think, they go, sort of a this, it's sort of a that, it's sort of a nothing. It's sort of a nothing.
Yeah.
I'd rather you go, than go sort of, because the sort of implies that you're thinking so deeply that you can only communicate it by, it's sort of this. I'm such a genius, you can't know what's really going on, but let's say it's sort of that.
The one that my daughters use right now is, wait, Andy, are we going to do this? Wait. Water. Wait, and you get so attuned to it that all I'm hearing is like, wait, like stop saying wait.
Well, how about the thing that drives me crazy is on commercials. Like this drives me crazy is like the commercials are always telling you who you are. You're not somebody who likes to drink a beer that's not smooth. You like a car that drives this way, but you don't like a car that you can't get out of the back. I mean, it's all these things where they think that you're watching the immersion and go, yes, that's true. I really, right. I am a guy who enjoys.
It's like cops interrogating you. Right? You did see his face that night.
Or stereo, when I was a stereo salesman in the 80s, you'd always try and get yes answers. You never get a yes, no answer. So you like, you want a stereo, right? Yes. If I can get you a price on it.
That's a sales trick?
I don't know if it worked that well. Okay. But if you say to a guy, you're probably not going to buy today, right? It's not going to work, yeah. Right?
You don't want this.
Let me ask you a question, Chris. If I could give you a price on the stereo system that you were happy with, wouldn't it be a great thing for you to bring it home today and start listening to it?
Yeah, sure it would. So keeping it positive.
But that's not the real Chris Jericho. The real Chris Jericho is, let me tell you, pal.
Yeah, right.
If I don't have that system in my car with a comp.
Right, with extra wires and extra boosting. So you're a stereo salesman. What was the secret? Like, do you have to sell two stereos a day to make money, or do you sell – how does that even work?
Well, I think we're blessed to live in a society where we no longer have to be subjected to that kind of sales. I mean, it is like a wonderland today. You really can't get ripped off on something except mattress. I think you can still get ripped off on mattresses, because if you notice, mattresses, like, they go, hey, come down to the Mattress King if you see a better price on the same. It has to be on the exact same mattress, where these companies make different ones for different department stores.
Okay.
So don't buy into the mattress hype. But when I would sell stereos, there was a big profit margin. So, like, for example, they were house speakers that were made by the stereo company.
Mm-hmm.
They cost like $5 to make, but they sold like 300. And if you came in and I demoed them for you and I put on my Donald Fagen IGY album, you would hear this boom, ch-ch, boom, ch-ch, boom. Ch-ch. You go, wow, listen to that bass. Listen to that top end. A week later, when you got it at home, you want to jump out of a window because you really want a flatter sound. So I was a bad salesman in that when I learned that was true, I wouldn't sell those speakers.
Oh, you didn't want to be ripping people off.
I didn't want to rip people off.
So like, what's the good tunes? You said Donald Fagen album?
Yes, IGY, that one. Yeah, because it has all the – anything by Steely Dan was great to sell.
Because whenever we do sound checks, the sound guy always uses the Sting song because it's got heavy bass.
Gives you all that
nuances of it.
And this was just like a matter of it sounded exciting in the moment. But that's a very – like, I'm a guitar player, so I love my guitar. It's a Guild acoustic. But there's no way I'm one of these guitarists who could have gone in and played the guitar and realized it in the moment. Like, mm-hmm. I love it now, but I could never – if someone wanted me to pick out a guitar for them, forget it. Because I don't have that kind of ear or knowledge that certain people have. Like, this is a beautiful guitar. That's
right.
You know, so
– Sonically.
Sonically. Yeah, so yeah, yeah. If you're going to buy a guitar, you're sunk. I also sold it. I also sold guitars for a living at Guitar Center.
And that's an interesting point of selling guitars at Guitar Center. Do most people still end up picking up the guitar and start playing Stairway to Heaven?
They do, but I was very, I had a limited thing. I worked at a Guitar Center in a very, like a desolate area down mm-hmm. in the South Bay, like Hawthorne. No one ever came in. So it was a bad, I made minimum wage. It was not like any other sales job I had, but it seemed like pure hell to me.
Yeah.
It seemed like I would, at one point, tell someone to shove, Stairway to Heaven up their ass. You know, because it's just like, even as a stereo salesman, I got into this thing, which was like people would bring their expert friend in
mm-hmm.
and look, you know, so they wouldn't get ripped off. And then as I got tired of selling, I started to get very mad. I could tell this is not for me. I have to quit because I would always say to the guy, the expert, no, well, you happen to be wrong, Mr. Expert Friend. You're wrong. How do you feel now? You got brought in here by your friend to be, it's like, and then no, that's, you're not going to get a sale after
yeah,
that.
Not like that way.
So I had to get out because I was in sales for years and I kind of liked it. But I mean, I sold door to door even.
That's a lost vocation.
I don't think you could even do it now.
In this day and age. I was thinking, I remember as a kid, like encyclopedia salesmen.
Yes.
Or even travel agents. Like, not sure, but maybe there might be a travel agent here or there, but most people just go online and buy their own stuff. Or like encyclopedias, who even needs encyclopedias anymore? But if you wanted one,
yeah.
You wouldn't be going door to door with it.
Yeah.
So what were you door to door selling?
Well, this was terrible. It was a really terrible thing. It was in 1980, and I was selling door to door home improvements. It was like a room additions and patio enclosures, and it was just the worst because I wasn't even allowed to give a full price, nor could I have given a full price. I didn't know what the hell I was selling. The only thing I could do was, like, I had a really great measuring tape thing that I could put along the ground. And measure 10 feet that way, and then, you know, you clip it, you know, you hit the thing, and it sucks the back into itself. Yeah. So maybe I would go, this electric meter might have to be moved. And then I would try to reschedule the closer to come in. Uh-huh. And it was a terrible job. I got one joke out of it. I said, I sold door to door for 2 years until I learned a valuable lesson. People don't like to be disturbed at home.
That's true.
I got bit on my ass by a dog once.
See, that's weird. Like, I used to be a paper boy, and when you go collect,
right,
you collect the money.
Yeah.
It's always weird because, you know, I never had a Playboy penthouse forum experience.
That's what I was looking for.
But there was a couple ladies in bathrobes opening the door. Not ladies that you'd want to see in bathrobes, but it's creepy. Come inside, close the door. She's got the bathrobe on. It's like, you're a 15-year-old kid. I don't need to be seeing this.
You don't need to be, but that's true.
Did you ever have that?
I never have. It's like, I hear these things, like, everybody who sold door-to-door would tell me, not everybody, but some people say, oh, I'll never forget the time, you know, the lady answered the door with a negligee, which I don't even think they make anymore, negligee and two martinis. There's a famous joke about, you know, stock joke. Stand-up comedy joke about the comedian who goes to the hotel room of this woman, and he knocks on the door, and she's in the negligee after a show, and she goes, I saw you earlier tonight, and I just loved your show, so I had to invite you up. And he says, early show or late show? Because all he cares about which show he did well on.
But that's kind of the famous comedian, like, all great comedians are a little bit neurotic, a little bit strange. Is that a true thing that you've noticed over the years?
I think that they can be odd. I like to think of myself as fairly normal, but I may – that just maybe because I don't want to walk around thinking I'm an oddball. But I think the thing is, like, comics in general I think are a great group of people because – you know, if you had to hang around all actors, I mean, I have actor friends and they're great, but there is, just by the definition of the job, they have to be more like, how do I look and what's happening with me and all that kind of thing. Whereas stand-up comics in general, I don't think people who like me because I'm a dreamboat. Even my wife says, look, my wife – people think I'm gay, but my wife's name is Mrs. Beardsley. Mrs. Beardsley. You see, this is the fifth laugh I've gotten from that.
I like it's the repetition of it, though. Because in comedy, repetition equals laughs.
Well, in my case.
You just keep coming back.
Or berating. Wait, what didn't you like about that one?
Oh, right. Now you feel bad. Huh? That was bad?
But when we worked together, though.
Yeah,
that was the best because I love – if I could just work as an agent,
oh, gosh.
The fact – me being your agent, I swear to God, it was so much fun.
Yeah.
And I know that there's got to – the reason why it wasn't picked up is because it was good. That's my theory now. People are like, oh, we can't.
Is that the rule in Hollywood, right?
Well, not really, but I just felt like I did two things. One where I was like a judge for kids' cases. It was the most fun I've ever had.
That's a great idea.
Oh, it was so much fun. I thought, oh, this is going to get
picked up. Like, this kid broke my skateboard or something?
Yeah, it was over family squabbles.
Uh-huh.
And I got one kid took a picture of her arm, and she said it was her brother's butt crack, right? And then I said to her, this was like the greatest moment I think of my life. I said to her, which arm did you use? And she pointed to it. And she's like 7 years old. I'm celebrating. I'm high-fiving. You've been caught. Because I asked her, like a Columbo type, which arm. And we celebrated in my chambers for an hour.
Well, that arm wouldn't fit in the butt crack? No.
She was showing me that she actually took a picture of her arm.
Okay.
Because she pointed to which one she used. And her whole point was – and then even after that, she's like, you still can't prove it.
Yeah. Like,
you know that was my arm.
Right. See, but that's – we're talking about our show, But I'm Chris Jericho, which we filmed – it's almost – I think it's like 3 years ago now. And it was really funny. And like you said, you're just kind of waiting. What can we do with this? And then nothing ever happens with it. But it's like, you know – from being in this job as long as you have and I have, when you have something magical. And it's frustrating when something doesn't get picked up, when you know it's good enough to do that.
Even when you tell yourself that it doesn't matter. I mean, I think I've developed after 73 years in the business and as I enter
I'm looking every year of it.
And as I look every year, but as I order off of the Denny's 55 and over menu, which I have looked at, but I refuse to.
Is it anything good on it?
Well, the thing that cracks me up is that it's the senior 55 and over menu. Every item on it is has senior in front of it. So you have to order the senior chicken parmesan. The worst one is the senior tilapia. I don't even like a young bottom feeding fish. But now an old fish, an old bottom feeder with wrinkles. Bring me the oldest tilapia you can find.
Yeah. They're really shoving it down your throat too. All right, yeah. Old guy, can I have the senior ice cream?
Oh, I'm sure they do
the
a
senior
little,
A.
They do a little song if you order it. Hello, old guy. Here's your coffee and here's your tilapia. Enjoy it.
Before you die.
No one would order it off the regular menu. Who goes to Denny's to order tilapia?
Right.
Is the seafood good?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's available at every single Denny's.
Right. We're in Hammond, Indiana. Is the seafood fresh?
Yeah, right.
We're landlocked for 2,000 miles.
You were at a Red Lobster in Iowa. Yeah. How is the lobster? Is it pretty fresh?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we got it right from the...
Straight out of the pond that's out front from the rain.
Yeah. You were talking earlier, Andy, about hack comedians, which I think the two of us are right now after those bits, and you used to call them out in your own act. But before we get into what exactly a hack comedian is, let me tell everyone about another place to find some good comedy, and this is not hack. I'm talking about audible.com/Jericho. You can find the audiobook version of my third book, The Best in the World at What? I Have No Idea, which is narrated not by me, but I think it's a Shakespearean-trained actor. He did a great job. You can download my audiobook for free. That's right, for free. If you sign up for audible.com/Jericho now. Okay, audible.com/Jericho is the best way to listen to any audiobook. You can download your books or shows to your phone or tablet and listen anytime, anywhere, any place. And by signing up for a 30-day trial with Audible, you'll be able to get my audiobook or choose from tons of other popular titles. Audible is the best source for everyday entertainment. They got an unmatched selection of audiobooks, original audio shows, news, and comedy. Yeah, comedy makes you laugh. And Audible has great features to make listening as easy and convenient as possible. Audible's got chapter navigation, narration speed control. You can even share some of your favorite excerpts with friends. It's very, very cool. And like I said, you can access your books and shows anytime, anywhere, any place, right from your smartphone or your tablet. Okay, so join Audible today. Explore the world's leading provider of audiobooks, the most convenient way to check out a new book, and enjoy the amazing performances by the actors and the authors themselves and the narrators that bring the books to life. Check them all out at audible.com/Jericho. And remember, you start a 30-day trial, you can download your first audiobook for free. All right? Best in the World at What? I Have No Idea for free. If you go to audible.com/Jericho, it'll get you started on your free 30-day trial and audiobook. audible.com/Jericho. Read a book without having to read it. How cool is that?
It's your last chance to get great holiday savings at Guitar Center. Like a Simmons SD550 electronic drum kit, just $399. Add your choice of AKG K52 headphones or a Shure SM48 mic, each just $39. Plus, the newest and hottest guitars, drums, keys, and more. Exclusive gear you can't get anywhere else. Special financing, lessons for the beginner on your list, and gift cards. The perfect present for every musician. So hurry in and find your sound at Guitar Center.
You mentioned before talking about hacks and that sort of a thing. Do you, and I know you've done routines calling out certain comedians for being, and now what is your definition of what a hack comedian is?
Well, it's kind of harder today. In the old days, it was very easy because it would be like people would use like Sten. Like I wrote an article for National Lampoon in 1991 called The Hack Comics Handbook. It's still on my website if anyone... If anybody would go to my website, I think my website would get shocked at the visitors. Everybody would be cleaning up on my website, shaving. Yes, can we help you?
Wipe away the virtual cobwebs if you go there.
Current dates, we're still working on the current dates. But we have where he was in 2005. So back then, like every comic, like in the 80s, tried to sound like Seinfeld. Who's the genius? It's harder. It's harder today, but it's basically like I would call Jimmy Fallon hacky because he's invested so much in I'm happy, everything's great. So he takes that when that precedes that the hack part is when that precedes real life. You know, like he's kind of got a formula. He knows how to make it viral. Like I even say, like I can't even get my own viruses to go viral, but he knows if he does a spoon and potato salad toss with Cameron Diaz, it's going to go viral. That, to me, is hacky because it's calculated ways of getting audiences. Mm. And it doesn't feel like a real experience to me when you watch it.
Okay.
Whereas Letterman was a curmudgeon. He wasn't afraid to show his real personality, so that's the opposite of hack.
He seemed like always he was kind of grumpy, right?
He was a grumpy. He would, one of his bits was people would be walking down the street, and he would spray water on them. That was one of his recurring bits. He'd just spray a huge hose of water from the studio. You know, he'd operate.
Yeah.
Now, get the hell out of here. Now go back to the Port Authority terminal and get out.
Because you did a lot of work with Letterman.
Yeah.
What kind of stuff did you do?
I was very lucky that he made the effort himself to have me do these field pieces that he used to do all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if people remember the early Lettermans where he would do like do one called Just Bulbs. He would
go. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
What else do you sell here? Just bulbs.
Just bulbs. That's it.
Do you have desks here or lamps? No, just bulbs.
Just bulbs. And he would do these all of himself, all by himself. But then he started to get mobbed. He was like a famous guy, mm-hmm. and he couldn't be himself. And so that's one of the reasons why I started to do them was because he wasn't doing them. I don't know if you remember, he did those things with Rupert G, where Rupert G would have
like the diner or something like that.
The deli, but Rupert G would go out with a camera on his forehead,
yeah,
and Letterman would sit in a van and tell him to say all these terrible things. He worked as a
Rupert was just a normal guy.
Yeah, just a normal guy. Yeah. And he just would say anything. Hey, you got a problem, tough guy? And once I think they got in trouble. They started getting in trouble. They had to rescue Rupert.
So what kind of stuff did they have you do?
Well, I went to a couple Super Bowls. I went to Yankee spring training twice. I went to Wall Street when it collapsed. I went to the Unclaimed Baggage Center, which is a place like in Alabama, where if you don't claim your luggage, it all gets sent to there, and there's a store, and you can buy, I guess, someone's toothbrush.
They actually allow you to buy it.
And they even have a little museum there because there are occasionally valuable things.
Toothbrushes.
Well, valuable, like, I can't remember. That's how valuable they were. I went to space camp once where
Is Letterman sending you there and then you just have to make up the bits as you go and do some interesting stuff? Or do you have a list of things to try and do?
My friend Jeremy Weiner was the writer who always went out with me. Mm-hmm. But all the writers would write stuff for it. And then they would send me out with that, and then whatever happened, if I ad-libbed or whatever, or Jeremy, he was the main writer, he would feed me stuff. So it was that kind of a thing.
Okay.
You know, so they would arrange it, and then I would just go there. And some of them was, like, exciting because I do the Super Bowl, and then the next day I go fly to Dave.
That's great. But
yeah, like the last one I did was when the Steelers won.
Ah.
And so what's the guy, the Steeler quarterback?
Roethlisberger.
Yeah. So he high-fived. He didn't know he was high-fiving me or low-fiving me, but I got into the locker room.
Yeah.
And so I was like, yeah, like that. And he goes, and then the next day he was on the, because they always try and get the quarterback or whoever. So he was on the show. So it was just exciting.
So
you know?
Letterman obviously liked you. Did you ever do Carson?
No, because I am too young for that.
Okay.
I didn't do Carson, nor did I do the Sullivan Show, nor did I open for who's that guy who was now mammy. I never opened for Al Jolson.
Okay.
That's another rumor.
Those are all just urban myths.
Yes.
Okay. All right on. Right on.
I did have a hilarious roadster bit.
No. I heard you were Horseshack on Welcome Back, Kotter.
People thought. I swear to God, everyone. I absolutely thought I was that guy. And once, before he passed away, sadly, we both played the same club in Vegas. I opened for him at the Riviera Comedy Club all that week. Because he's walking around, I'm walking around. Hey, Horseshack, it's Horseshack.
Do you ever see that? Did you meet face to face and like go, wow?
Oh, yeah, because I was on the same show with him.
Right.
And he would come out, and his act wasn't – it wasn't sad, but he wasn't a stand-up.
You were blowing him out of the water.
I was kicking his – yeah. Well, that's very hard to say because it is extremely hard to do well in Vegas. If you do well in Vegas, you might have to question what your act is.
Hmm.
Because to me, if you go to Vegas and you want to see a great show – go see Love by the Beatles,
mm-hmm.
and you see Incredible, the greatest gymnasts, and the greatest
singing
sound system.
Yeah.
But in general, people don't go to Vegas for cutting-edge comedy.
Yeah, really?
No.
Because you still got guys that – there's like Don Rickles is still there.
Right.
You got like Carrot Top, and those guys have their residencies there to do their gigs.
Right, but the classic times were like the Rat Pack times.
Yeah.
And that's where Rickles came out of.
Right.
Rickles' whole thing was that he would insult all the other comics working in Vegas, and then eventually they made a TV special out of it, and then he got popular.
And that's what got him
over. He was like, people would – 3 in the morning he would play – at these places, and Sinatra would come in and all these. It must have been amazing.
Oh, yeah.
So I always go to Vegas hoping that's going to happen.
Yeah. So what kind of – what generation of guys did you come up in the business with?
Well, like I did the Young Comedian special in 1992, and on that special was Judd Apatow. He used to do stand-up.
Wow.
Ray Romano, Janine Garofalo, Bill Bellamy, Nick DiPaolo.
So
and I'm missing so much. So like,
names.
Yeah, and then I start, you know, Kathy Griffin, Bob Odenkirk, and David Cross, who became Mr. Show.
Yeah.
It was a really great. It was like the late 80s, early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of involved. Mark Maron, all these. We started this like alternative movement in Los Angeles.
Meeting?
Like comedy got very homogenized in the 90s. It was all – there were all these clubs. Every – town had too many clubs, and so you couldn't really fill them with good comics, and the club owners just went with crowd pleasing acts. So in other words, for every like Larry the Cable Guy, there's 75 other guys who were like Larry the Cable
Guy.
And so like even then it was kind of in a way not cool, but it was like it made me know I was on the right path when like, okay, these guys are getting great laughs from the audience, but they're kind of taking the easy way out. Almost all of them didn't go further, not that I'm rooting against them, but it just shows you that if you do what you believe in, you will get somewhere, even if it's not where you wanted to get or what you expected.
Well, it's interesting because you're talking about, like, let me use Larry the Cable Guy as an example, and then if you have, like, you know, Art the Garbage Man and Dave the Plumber, whatever, all guys doing kind of that same bit. It's almost like in rock and roll, when a band gets really big, they have an offshoot of 20 bands that kind of sound the same.
They're trying to sound
and
the same.
You know that, right?
Yeah. Hold on. Note to self, work on Art the Plumber bit and Eddie the Garbage Man and submit to the various stations.
ABC.
they would have that too in the 90s, like the funniest plumber in Queens and all these kind of things.
Oh, like he would – that would be his bit?
Well, no. They would just have these contests because constantly they're always looking for – that's why – like in a lot of ways, singing contests and comedy, they've been around forever, but they weren't – the thing that's become bad about it is they weren't like the main way people thought. You know, Bob Dylan was not like a – funniest folk singer and like it was something that was always part of the business. Like there was a famous San Francisco competition, but when it became like, you know, just reality shows taking over the air, it starts to get —
how do you feel about that, like America's Greatest Comic or Idol or The Voice or one of those things?
Well, I think I was a judge on on Last Comic Standing, and it was like one of these things where I slammed it for years, so I was like – and then I was broke. But, you know, it's going to sound self-serving, but I actually enjoyed the year I was on because Craig Robinson was the host, and he was just funny. And it was like I got to do it with Greg Giraldo and Natasha Leggero. So it was we did it. I didn't want to be – I'll tell you what it is. I can't – like to me, I despise the Simon Cowell – of personalities, because to me the worst thing you can tell a singer, or you know, that's not how someone becomes a great singer, is by some kind of jerk telling him how bad they are. You know, like when you need to tell that Jennifer Hudson she'd never make
it. Exactly.
So,
and she goes, wins an Oscar. So,
right. Now you're going to get great people coming to those shows because that's a viable path for them.
Yeah.
But it's like My parents loved Dancing with the Stars when it first came out.
Mm-hmm.
They liked that. And it's fun. You could see that certain things work.
Yeah.
So I don't want to be like a guy who sits and smokes a pipe and wears a monocle and goes, "I'm sorry, Mr. Jerry Kidd, this is beneath me."
The world needs more monocles, by the way.
It does.
Talk about the eye control you need to hold the damn monocle on. Like, that's the hardest part.
Colonel Clank did it.
Well, he did. And the Monopoly guy. And those are your two examples.
I never saw the Monopoly, a live picture of the Monopoly guy.
Does he have a name? We have to find out.
So I bet he does.
Whoever's listening right now, let us know what his name is and get back to us here.
And also, figure out what's the real deal with Baltic Avenue, all right?
Yeah, this Baltic Avenue.
Yeah.
What bullshit.
Yeah, you think I'm going to buy that? Marvin Gardens?
Oh, man. So another thing I was going to ask you about, too, we've been talking about how you're going on the road as a comedian. Do you still go on the road a lot as a comedian, or do you just stay more around L.A.? Because that's one thing I like about comedians, is that it's very similar to rock and roll or wrestling. His name is Rich Uncle Pennybags.
Is Is what my, is my
That's
name?
That's the Monopoly Man, Mitch, Rich Uncle
real?
Penny Bags. Yeah, Stacy just looked
I
it up and found it.
I think you made that up, Stacy.
You just wrote that down.
Oh, Stacy,
Rich Uncle Penny Bags. It sounds.
He's
a little
got a fistful. Isn't he gonna have a fistful of dollars too? I didn't think
he
about
does.
That.
It sounds a little perverted, like Uncle Penny Bags.
Uncle Penny Bags.
Put on your pajamas. I'm coming home.
Oh, now you've made Monopoly.
I took it the next way. Was that a hack?
Thing? No. No, it was a, now you're going to scare children.
Is that adventurous? Can I make that a bit? Like if Monopoly was really like about this crazy pedophile?
Actually, well, you might get sued. But actually, nothing is hack unless you're, like I'm a big hack off stage. I love corny puns.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing's hack unless you're making your living from corny puns. From doing, yeah.
Who's the biggest hack in your opinion?
Well, that's tough to say. I mean, the old days it was easy because you could identify them by the fact that they all sounded like Seinfeld or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard. I mean, it's like I even like go past the word hack. It's more like people who just – I have found like Dennis Miller, who used to be the funniest guy in the world and then decided, I guess, after 9/11 he got freaked out. Mm-hmm. And now he's like opening up for Bill O'Reilly. That guy – that gets me more angry than a prop comic or something that I don't
gotcha.
Like. You know, because I just don't think if someone's a bad comic, it doesn't affect me like it used to affect me when – all the clubs were filled with them. And like you're asking me, what do I do now? Like I still do go out on the road mm-hmm. as much as I can. I just came from a thing where I did four nights in the Northwest, and it's like a little tour. My manager, Zach, came up with this tour, and I love it. But now it's even better because in the old days, people didn't know what they were coming. I used to joke about how in the 80s they would have like a – someone from the club would go, congratulations, you've won our answer the phone contest. Would you be willing to bring you and 60 people of your friends who know less than you about comedy to the club? Who's playing? It's comedy. You like it. It's like going to a movie theater and you go, what's playing? It's a movie.
Yeah. Just come on.
Just come on
what
in.
You want.
And that's the way it used to be. But now people can, you know, click on who's there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually a comedy renaissance right now, I think.
Is there?
So the best comics, like, you know, in the old days you couldn't say, you know, Ellen couldn't say she was gay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's just a lot of things that blocked you from being yourself. On the other hand, sometimes those restrictions can make the best comedy because you're fighting against something. But right now, I think it's pretty cool what's happening, how many great comics there are.
What makes for a good comedy club? Like, you know, for me, if I go into play a rock and roll club, is there a certain vibe you walk into a club and go, this is going to be great or this is going to be the shits?
Well, there's two answers to that. One answer is what I'd like there to be and mm-hmm. what there is. So what I'd like there to be was used to be a club called Luna Park. And there was a Beth Lapidus had this show called The Uncabaret, which was like this amazing show in the 90s in L.A. It was what the, like one of the first alternative rooms. The thing I loved about that place was it was about 125 seats. Everybody had a great seat. I think comedy really works in a small room
mm-hmm.
way better than it works in a theater. They also had a great menu. So that to me, it would be if a club that has good food. But I can't always get the food part of it. So it's more like, is it intimate? Do the people know why they're there?
Mm-hmm.
And then that just starts to form a vibe.
Right.
You know?
Right, right. What does it say on your poster? Andy Kindler, as seen on TV and
yes,
radio.
TV. The guy who, yes, the guy who invented Mr. Microphone. Yeah, I should use as seen on TV. What they usually do is they put every credit. For a long time, they would still do The Daily Show. I was briefly a correspondent on The Daily Show.
Oh, okay.
Many, many years ago. I was TV guy. I would review.
But because The Daily Show is hot.
That's right. They like that credit.
He's on The Daily Show.
From The Daily Show.
I'm sure Raymond is probably on there.
Raymond, when that was good. Yeah, that was big.
But I'm Chris Jericho.
Right, that was big.
Very small at the bottom.
Now I'm using a lot of, like people, if I say I'm Mort from Bob's Burgers.
Okay.
They like that.
Because that's you do a lot of voiceovers.
I do. I don't do a lot of voiceovers, but I like the way you're describing my career. He does a lot of voiceovers.
Yeah.
For example, he's Mort on Bob's Burgers. I used to tell people I'm a recurring character on Bob's Burgers. It's like, why do I have to tell them what my contractual deal is?
Yeah.
Just say he plays Mort on Bob's Burgers.
I'm
Let them figure
character
out.
With a minimum of 6 episodes per season.
Right.
On a 22-season program.
I know. I would go further. I don't have a specific minimum or maximum, so I never know when I'm going to work. It's very sad, folks. Oh, I'm sorry. Have we gone past the credit part?
It's hard to be a comedian, and I don't know where I'm getting my next gig from. I don't have a lot of cash saved up, so
right.
I need to be hired.
But please enjoy me.
Yeah,
but please put
show.
That aside. I don't want you to be focusing on what I haven't gotten.
But you told me before that you have a voiceover. You have a you booked a voiceover. You got a busy
two
day
big things. It's two big things. First of all, at noon, I don't want people to get too excited about it or to come down to where I'm getting my hair cut at noon.
Oh,
very
at noon.
Excited,
right?
And it's in Brentwood. I don't kid around.
Brentwood.
Brentwood's a ritzy place,
famous for the haircuts.
Yeah, I don't go to West LA to get a haircut.
Bad haircuts there.
Even if it's good, I can't be seen there. So I have a haircut, and then I have an ADR session, additional dialogue I don't know, you know all this. This is for the lay person who's listening.
Right.
So that means that either I wasn't in the episode or my original recordings were so poor that they had to bring me in. All I know is I'm paid again. That's all I know.
Oh, okay. That's all that matters. And is this for Bob's the Burger?
Bob's Burgers. So I'll go in there, and sometimes what they'll do is if they've added dialogue, they'll show me a cartoon, well, whatever you want to call it, animation of the actual show with Lauren Bouchard, who's one of the creators of the show. He usually does my voice. I guess. Hey.
So he does it for you?
He does it as a scratch.
Oh, gotcha.
And then I listen back to it. And then when they call me, you know, matching, they say about me, he's the king of not being able to match his voice to the If you like animation where it seems like it's bad ventriloquism, you'll enjoy Andy Kindler.
If you like perfectly matched dialogue and cartoons, stay away from
Kindler. Stay away from Andy Kindler.
Right. If you want that kind of Kung Fu Shaw Brothers 1970s, it's off a bit.
That's Andy Kindler.
That's the one.
If you like South Park, I don't know if you ever saw the original 3-minute thing. It was hilarious. Mm-hmm. It was about Christmas, whatever. And it's like, I still can't believe the joke is continuing on to this day that it's terrible animation and horrible voices.
Yeah.
So how did that become a hit? As soon as I hear, go down to South Park, I'm done. I'll watch anything. Hey, Cartman.
What kind of a voice do you have on Bob's Burgers?
I have a voice. Let me take a second to get into the character. Hi, Chris. I'm Mort from Bob's Burgers. Do you want to hear my regular voice now?
Please.
Hey, Chris. Nice to be on the show. I'm Andy Kindler.
That's amazing stuff, dude.
Yeah, I didn't even turn around.
I think there should be some Oscars, Grammys, Tonys, Emmys, Razzies, all of the above.
I would like to get a Cable Ace Award, which is an award in the late 80s. I'm up for a Tweety. Twitter awards are coming up.
Which is...
I got a replier. I'm up for best reply in a... No.
Okay.
Actually, they do have Twitter awards, so I shouldn't have said that.
But that's to me, that sounds like something they would have. But it's amazing the power of the social media, I'll tell you this. Because today, I'm not going to say the exact airline because they made up for it on the back end. But I got on the plane and my seat was broken and was basically told... deal with it or get off the plane.
Wow.
So I went on to social media, 2.6 million Twitter followers, and wrote at Schwarzky Airlines.
It is Schwarzky. I knew you'd know. Yeah, they're very good.
Stupid airline. And I said, you know, is this how you treat your customers with this, this, and this? I'm very unacceptable. This is disappointing and unacceptable. Send. 2 minutes later, I'm getting DMs. Please, sir, what can we do to help you? What can we do to fix you? That has power to go on Twitter.
Yes.
And if you use that to your advantage, you can get extra stuff nowadays.
Yeah, I often will go on a plane. I go, I don't like the looks of this guy. Dear followers, this guy looks creepy. Let's get him off. Come on.
Now,
and then they remove him. No, I'm just kidding.
What do they do? What do they do if he's following you, though?
Oh, I'm...
I'm sitting next to Andy Kim. What the hell?
I'm kind of careful in a way because I'm already so strident on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people will follow me. It's like... They like it. I'll be in a mood where I'll do goofy things for 8 hours,
mm-hmm.
and then I'll go into a political tirade.
Right.
So that's why I try to watch. I'm already embarrassed myself half the day anyway, because it's like, if you don't know who I am, it's like, who's this strident guy who just can't get rid of, you know, he's so annoying. So then I don't want to be on top of that saying, Dear Schmookle Airlines, what kind of a pillow is this? Are you kidding? You call these headphones?
What happened to magazines? We used to have magazines aboard planes. That's how you know you're getting older, that there used to be magazines aboard planes.
Yeah, or I don't even smoke, but I try to smoke on the plane just because it seems like...
Because there's ashtrays.
I still can't believe it.
There's still some planes.
That doesn't make me confident that they have an ashtray thing sticking out of the bathroom door sometimes.
It's still that. And I always love the concept of smoking and non-smoking on planes anyways, because where's the line? Like,
yes.
I'm in 14D, non-smoking. you're in 15A smoking, and is this wall of 15 and 14 going to keep that smoke away?
It was. I mean, I actually am old enough that I do remember, and I smoked for like every once in a while in my early 20s. You know, luckily I didn't get addicted to it, but I do remember smoking on a plane. It's just so stupid.
Just because you could.
How could it? No, because people did it, and it was like – and back then – and I remember when they stopped having in bars, I really was afraid it was going to hurt business and stuff like that, you know,
mm-hmm, right.
As a comedian and stuff. And now I can't remember what it was like to
breathe
and smoke.
If you walk into a place that maybe allows you to smoke, it just is like a gas chamber.
Yeah.
You know? Did you who was your favorite comedians when you were getting into the biz?
Well, I was lucky in one way, was that I was not a stand-up comedy fanatic.
Okay.
Which I think helped me, because it's when you start, you have to find your own voice. And I think if I had a million other comics in my head, delivery-wise, it would have affected me. But I was more into as a young kid, Jackie Gleason and Dick Van Dyke. I grew up on sitcoms, so I loved Mary Tyler Moore. And then I also loved Woody Allen movies. And and in the 80s, I got into Letterman and Saturday Night Live and SCTV and Richard Lewis. I loved the comedy that I think Letterman perfected, which was basically, I'm going to do this bit, and I'm going to call attention to the fact that it's ridiculous that I'm doing a bit. And so it never took itself seriously. So Richard Lewis, I saw him once interviewed and on the show, and he goes, my advice to young comics is, don't go right to L.A. Start out somewhere small. You don't have to come to L.A. immediately.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, but who am I? Who am I? I'm just like Satan at a barbecue. All right? So that to me sums it all. Well, you don't take yourself too seriously. And I think that's a danger. That's why my favorite comics are the ones who are vulnerable, kind of,
Because you see those comics that, for example, and I think you might have even talked about him, but I was talking about somebody the other day about Dane Cook. Who was super huge. He played one year I was in Tampa and he was playing the arena that night.
Yes.
And now he's not. And what makes someone so big and then just not big anymore?
In his case, it was a classic case of someone's ambition getting out ahead of where they were creatively.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that is also hard to control. Because it's, you can say to somebody, you're not ready for this or whatever, but then what are you going to do when the opportunity comes?
Mm-hmm.
So because he was so much basing his appeal on a meteoric rise and all these the way he used social media, I think he was even MySpace back then.
Right.
It creates this expectation. I did comedy for 10 years before I got my first Letterman chance, and it wasn't very good.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no microscope on me. He had a thing where his fame got so huge that every single thing he did, there's a microscope on it. How good is it going to be now? And I also think he based a lot of his – people liked him. I think they were kind of younger kids, 15, 16-year-old kids. So maybe they outgrew it. But also, I don't know, there was a lot of meat to what he was doing. It was a lot of
It was more just attitude and looks,
kind of
rock star quality, right?
Yeah, and then he got a lot of he'll probably still go. I mean, he's still doing stuff, but he did a lot of acting things.
Mm-hmm.
And he got movie things. And
well, it's you said, when you get put in that position and you're a leading man right out of the gate, you probably only get one or two chances. And if those movies don't sell, then you're not leading man anymore.
Especially if you're kind of up in the ante. I'm not saying he purposely upped the ante, but he was he embraced the fame. So then it's if I did 8 roles and it was bad, you wouldn't maybe even notice it,
Right.
But then every single thing, it's not just he's getting a small part, he's getting leads
in movies
that he wouldn't have normally gotten.
Right.
So it's just it is the downside of having so much attention on you is sometimes not good.
And you're doing it the opposite. You're really working your way up the ladder to get to that leading man status.
The ladder, in my case, has been removed and has been put away. And I am allowed a step stool. So sometimes I can reach up. I can see the big money at the top shelf. And I get the little – I can barely – I'm short. And I can barely reach. And if I get I have to get an organized crime guy to stand on his shoulders and then get some real opportunities.
It's one of those games at the arcade where you put the quarter down and it pushes the other quarters back. And you're just right at the edge.
Oh, that's me. That's it.
It falls and you grab that quarter.
Yes. Yes.
And you're waiting.
I never get the Koopy doll, whatever the heck they call it. Koopy doll, whatever it's called.
Koopy doll.
What's the matter? I used to love that. You ever have lines when you were a kid you didn't know what they were? One of those lines was, what's the matter? They couldn't guess your weight? Yeah. And do you know what that's from?
From the carnival or something?
Yes, from the circus.
Yeah.
So it's like if you're wearing a bad – and Letterman used to use it. Like if you're wearing a bad outfit – he would assume they couldn't guess your weight. You won this terrible tie. Yeah. Some of the things like that, like my dad, when I was a kid, I used to say, see you later to him. And he'd go, not if I see you first. So it took me 20 years to figure out what that meant. I thought it meant like if he sees me first, then I won't be able to see him later. But then I realized what it really means is if he sees me, he will avoid me.
Right. If he sees your back and you don't see him, he's going to run away. Because I get that too all the time. I'm trying to think about it.
Like, yeah, where they come
from. If I see you first.
Yes.
Okay. Because the other one I used to get is, why don't you take 2 weeks off and quit the business? And I'd be thinking about that. Steve Austin used to say that to me all the time. And I'd be like, so I take 2 weeks off and then quit the business? Or does the quitting start when you have that first day off? You know, do you need
2 weeks.
Right? Do I need 2 weeks to decide when to quit?
Same way I focus on the – you'd think as a comedian I would go right to the joke, but I focus on the specifics.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of part of your genius, shall we say. Oh, I'm sitting here with the ridiculous Andy Kindler. You're a nebbish, man. You also worked with Ray Romano. Before we get into that, I want to find out what it was like working with Ray on that huge, huge show. But let me give a quick thanks to my friends at True Car and the True Car app. They helped me buy my 2016 Cadillac Escalade from Dimmitt Cadillac in Clearwater, Florida. And using True Car not only saved me about $3,000, it also saved me hours of time. I was in and out of the dealership in about 90 minutes. Think about that, an hour and a half to buy a new car. Where else are you going to do that and get save money as well? It was that fast. It was that easy. This is not a gimmick. I wanted to use TrueCar to see if it really worked. And by my experience, yes, it really does. TrueCar and the TrueCar app can also do the same for you. They can help you even if you're looking for a used vehicle. Over 500,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. So whether you're looking for a brand new car or a gently used car, you can get upfront pricing information from TrueCar so you can enjoy a better car buying experience. Using TrueCar and the TrueCar app lets you see what other people paid for the car you want so you can determine a fair price and feel confident when you buy your car. TrueCar connects you with the local certified dealer of your choosing who will honor your guaranteed savings, which makes your car buying process quicker and easier. Like I said, an hour and a half. Think about that. That's the length of Spinal Tap. You can put on This is Spinal Tap. Watch the movie. It's about 87 minutes long. When it's done, you'll have a new car thanks to the TrueCar app. And also, TrueCar users save an average of $3,279 off MSRP. You're going to save that much money. That's a huge chunk of change, man. And don't forget, over 2 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. And don't worry about finding a certified dealer. There's over 11,000 of them in TrueCar's network nationwide. So when you're ready to buy a new or used vehicle, visit TrueCar.com or download the TrueCar app to enjoy a better, quicker, cheaper car buying experience. I know I did. This really works. I did it myself to see if it worked, and it did. You need to check it out. Remember, some features are not available in all states, but you got to check out TrueCar.com and make car buying easier, quicker, and cheaper. Now, we talked about Ray Romano. You said you guys came up together. How was it working with him on that show?
Well, in a way, we came up together, but in a way, we didn't, because I'm from Queens, New York. He's from Queens, but he started in New York. I started out in L.A.
Oh, okay.
And so when we did the Young Comedian Special, that was the first time I ever really spent time with him. Mm-hmm. And then how I got the part on his show was from the writers, Phil Rosenthal and all these writers. We would, like, Lou Schneider and all these writers, we'd meet at a place called Victor's in the Valley, not on Franklin Avenue, and we would have breakfast like every Sunday, for years and years and years. So I got friendly with Phil that way, and his show got picked up the same year that his show got picked up, and then there were other shows. I was in a pilot that year that didn't get picked up, and I was recurring on Rain Man.
Oh, okay.
They wrote the part for me, which is also another only other
wrote
way.
Wrote it specifically
for
you.
Yes, it was written for me. It was created. Andy was created by the writers there.
In the classic tradition of Tony being Tony Danza's
That's
character
exactly
name
right.
in every show.
Yeah, and so far it's been mostly that way. Mort is a departure, and it's very difficult for me.
To know which line is yours on
what
the
does it mean?
Script.
What do you mean I'm Mort? I'm Andy, I say often.
Right. And it was a great cast, though, with Everyone Loves Raymond, one of those rare shows that just becomes almost a cultural phenomenon for seasons and seasons and seasons because of such great chemistry.
I think you're right. And also I think that that's what makes great sitcoms is – and that's where a lot of times trouble starts is because if you truly understand and accept that it's a collaboration – I think sitcoms have to be a collaboration. Like there's a famous story about how Carol O'Connor – got in a fight with Norman Lear, and they didn't get along. I'm sure Carol O'Connor was very hard to get along with, but at one point, like it was like Carol O'Connor or Norman Lear said, "It's either me or Carol O'Connor," and the network says it's Carol O'Connor. And I may not be getting all the details right, and maybe I'm, but the point is that you could not imagine All in the Family without Archie,
right?
You know, and so there's always this stress between writers and comedians. And it's kind of weird because, like, on Raymond, a lot of the writers were stand-up comedians. So I always thought, like, these that people's egos get in the way, and it's like, okay, because we all remember the time that that one actor guy tried to change his lines, and he was terrible, you know? So then in their mind, they go, never let that happen. And to me, it's like, I always feel like I'm open to the idea can come from anybody. You know, like the idea can come from anybody on the production.
Right.
So I think if you embrace the collaborative – like there's a book called Difficult Men, which is all about Mad Men and The Sopranos. And it was kind of nice to know that Breaking Bad, they say, was a very positive writer's room. Like that guy was not a mean guy at all.
Oh, I see. Vince Gilligan.
Yes. Yeah. And people loved to work for him, and they were open to ideas. That's like the goal, I think, is that. But it's very hard because there's so many different pressures in television, and a lot of times people who you could call jerks do better sometimes because they just take control. And a lot of times their own egos get in the way, and it's a whole thing.
I had David Koechner on, and he was talking about doing the Anchorman movies. And how it was the same thing where Adam McKay, the director, and of course Will Ferrell, here's the script, deliver what was written, okay, now have some fun. And he said, I don't know how those poor editors put together the movie because there were so many funny lines. Like, try this, say this. Hey, Andy, try this one. Chris, try this. And there was just a great collaborative effort of just guys giving each other lines to where we have 9 jokes deep for the same scene and we don't know which one to use.
And also because they're all those people you talk about are confident with their own abilities.
Right.
So like Adam McKay, he knows he's funny. Will Ferrell knows he's funny. That's when it's perfect. Because when it's the other way, it's usually because like showrunners who are don't ever change a line. Sometimes that – like on The Sopranos, that's the way it was kind of supposedly David Chase wouldn't want you to change it, whatever.
Yeah, the Coen brothers,
yeah.
Tarantino.
Now it's hard to argue with it when it's great. You know, to me, The Sopranos are the greatest show ever, so I can't argue with the with how they worked it. For whatever reason, that's how they wanted to do it. But I love that what you're talking about, too, can be really,
just
really
– collaborative effort. Yeah, improv.
If you trust everybody.
The ability to improv, yeah.
Yeah. So
we had that on But I'm Chris Jericho because it was such a quick shoot, but also knowing the quality of guys that we had involved, it's like just do what you want to do and we'll figure out the rest as we figure it out.
And that's kind of the Spinal Tap structure that I still think is amazing and I love it.
Yeah.
It's just hard to work it because like if you look at the Christopher Guest movies, some of them are amazing and some of them you can see some of the improv.
Yes.
You know, and that's a weird thing. Like you'd think if it was improv – it would always sound natural, but sometimes you hear it, like you can hear that they're looking, you can see, oh, okay, now I respect writers way more.
Well, but that works if you have that great chemistry.
True.
You know, like for example, like Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara, been together for so long, just stick them in a room together and you know something funny is going to happen.
Yeah, no
Whereas
question.
If you introduce a new guy, that's probably why they don't have a lot of new people in there because then that guy's trying to fit in like a sore thumb, you know?
Yeah, right.
Does a sore thumb
would have... No, that's a mix. That's what I would call a mixed metaphor.
Oh, okay.
That's so great. They, I love them. You know where you hear them a lot is on The Real Housewives. My wife and I watch The Real Housewives.
Yeah.
And it's like you start off with one thing and you go – I think it's like sticks out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
What would I say? Put in like
stick a – stick them in there like a sore thumb.
Which is probably where your thumb is sore because you're sticking it into places.
See, that's the thing. I always think of the technical – like for example, there's an expression, you couldn't care less, right? That's
right.
What it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't care less. I still try to justify I could care less on the basis of I don't care about it. I bet I could even care less about it.
Yeah, yes.
But the technical is you couldn't care less.
I couldn't care less.
Like I care so little about it.
There's no way I could care less about this, or I could care less. Yeah, it's kind of more of a sarcastic type thing.
Oh, I could care less.
I could care less, but I don't.
Yeah. See, the way you said it, it works.
It's all in the intonation.
You stuck it in there like a sore thumb.
Right, right. I stuck it in like a sore thumb, and I could care less how sore it is.
And by the way, I only learned about mixed metaphors because I read this article. I read The New Yorker.
It's obvious.
From the Monocle. But I read this article where this woman, her job was to copyright correct for years.
Right.
And she was like, it was a fascinating article. Like half the stuff I couldn't follow what she was saying, but that was one of her things, was one of her like pet peeves was mixed metaphors.
Yeah.
So then I started noticing it on The Real Housewives. If you look it up, you'll see examples
of it. Misusing.
You start out with one. I wish I could think of one right now, but you start out with one thing and then you end it with something else that doesn't relate
He's not the sharpest bulb in the shed.
Yes. He's not the sharpest pencil. He's not the sharpest pencil. I can't think of how you would translate.
In the toolbox.
Yeah, exactly.
Where, you know, why would you have a pencil? But you might have a pencil in the toolbox to take measurements.
No, but that's a mixed metaphor right there. Because he's not the sharp. His elevator doesn't go up to the penthouse? No, the top floor. Let's say his elevator is not working.
Right.
No, but you see, those things can work just because you're changing them.
But see, and I am a real stickler for those type of details. You mentioned tweeting before, texting as well. I go nuts.
Right.
With the your and the you apostrophe R-E misuse in this country today.
Yes. You know? Well, you're
the best.
Yes.
Y-O-U-R, the best.
Right.
That's not correct.
It's not correct.
You're insulting me by saying I'm the best and spelling it wrong.
The only reason why I'm not as hard on it as you are is because my sister was an educator for 35 years, and there's a certain segment of the population who are dyslexic, and even they wouldn't be able to – there's not even a correction for it.
Mm.
So my point is that I want you to feel guilt.
Mm.
Such guilt.
Shame.
Shame? Do you feel shame? I don't think you feel a lot of guilt and shame.
Not that guilty, yeah.
But I get what you're saying. It is a pet
peeve. It bugs me. It's one of those things that just bugs me. I see that all the time and it bugs me. But tell me some of your favorite comedians now, up and comers or your peers.
Well, I love Hannibal Buress is great.
Mm-hmm.
I love James Adomian, who's so great. He's a guy who does voices. He does impressions, but they're different than anything you've heard because he gets to the core of who the people are. And he does Jesse Ventura, and he does all these incredible. He does the best Bernie Sanders. People think Larry David is doing Bernie Sanders. He's doing Larry David.
Yeah.
And people go, he does the best Bernie Sanders. No, he's funny because he's Larry David doing it.
That's right, yeah.
And then there's Maria Bamford, who was just on Letterman.
Mm.
Oh, she had such a great set on Letterman.
I didn't see it.
So great. It's just a really – it's amazing now. I just feel like it's amazing now how many great stand-ups there are. It doesn't mean the TV is so great. I mean, there are great things on TV. Like I love Fred Armisen on Portlandia.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the people on Saturday Night Live now are very – the women on Saturday Night Live especially, and some of the men, they're incredible. Kate McKinnon.
Yeah. I think
Vanessa Bayer.
It's that transition phase where there's no big stars in the cast.
Yeah.
So everybody's kind of – going at the same – they're starting from the same point.
But I am in the school of that Lorne Michaels is the big scam. It's the biggest scam in the world that people think he's a genius.
In what way?
Well, because he doesn't – I mean he's just been one of these guys who's like – he's just one of these guys who's like – his famous quotes are, we didn't record Saturday Night Live at 11:30 because we were ready. We recorded it because it was Saturday night at 11. You know, all these kind of full of himself – quotes. So he bothers me. But
it was Lorne Michaels if he was Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah.
We always love Saturday Night Live. But yeah, I mean, it's become part of the pop culture, urban legend.
That he's Saturday the
Live.
Man. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
right.
He's the man behind, the successes of the show. But once again, as you know, it's a lot to do with the guys themselves and probably writing all their own stuff. And Lauren's just kind of giving the green light to do yes or no.
I would say, if anything, he's blocked greatness. and greatness happens despite him because I don't think he knows what he's looking at. When he's one of these guys who how did he eat his popcorn? Did he – you know, he's likes the mystery type thing.
Yeah.
But also the thing about Saturday Night Live is it's the one show where still the format is electrifying.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it still works.
I will, even when I've counted the show out, I'll go, I got to watch again. I got to see it this Saturday.
Yes.
You know, this Saturday, I got to see it. Now, when they're doing people like when Donald Trump is hosting, I don't want to watch it because he bothers me.
Is it bothering there might be a chance he could, do you think he has a chance to win the
Oh, he does have a chance, but I just can't even believe it. I think it's so embarrassing for this country. I can't think of any other major country that's had such a guy who literally knows nothing. He doesn't even know what he's saying when he's saying it.
Mm-hmm. Like just trying to get a rise out of people?
Yeah, because he doesn't know, like, anything. He's like based on ego. He's like the perfect example of someone whose entire worth is based on his money and his ego, you know?
I have a problem with his hair, too.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a good representation for America.
It's terrible.
You know?
We're not a windblown... We don't all look like owls. Well, that's... Also, that he thinks that he's attractive and that he thinks that his brand... Like, have you ever seen one of those Trump Towers? They're awful.
Yeah.
Look at it. It's gold. Gold is good. Huge. Huge. He's like a bad stand-up comic, too. Because he's like, Ted Cruz, I think he's born in Canada. It's true. It's true. It's true. It's like all the rhythm.
Airline peanuts. What's the deal with that?
Yeah. He won't be too far away from doing that.
Couple last questions. Big rumor that I heard over the years, basically that I just read actually earlier today. Did people ever think that you were a character from the WWE called Jameson?
Absolutely. And in fact, I actually got mad. Well, the guy's name is John DeBello, I think.
Okay.
But the last thing quote from him got me mad. The last quote from him was that he thought – what happened was somehow on IMDb, he – it's not on the actual, I think, Bushwhacker stuff. Yeah.
So, yeah, Jameson was like this really nerdy manager in the WWE late 90s, mid-90s, kind of like a typical like Revenge of the Nerds type guy.
Yeah, for the Bushwhackers.
Okay, for the Bushwhackers.
For the Bushwhackers, he was there. And he would go on the Bobby Heenan show.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And I've watched some of these things, and that's like a funny, kind of a funny show, that guy, Bobby Heenan. So people for a long time, somehow on IMDb, they credited me on those wrestling things. I don't think there's any credits on the wrestling things.
Yeah.
And then people were thinking that I was denying it for some reason. Why would I deny a credit? I played an inflated globe for Comedy Central, dressed up like a large mascot of the earth. And if I'm not trying to bury that credit, why would I bury a legitimate credit? So the last thing that got me pissed was they finally, a guy in Philadelphia who's like a wrestling guy, he cleared it up. And then the last quote from that guy was that he thought I was trying to get like notoriety with his credits.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Have you no shame, I said to him.
Jameson's pissed at you, man.
Yeah, the actual Jameson. He's like a – I think he works in New York as a bar – like a waiter.
Oh, okay.
Or a bartender or something like that.
All right. If anyone knows the real Jameson –
yeah, John DeComo. But people still think it's
right.
Never going to go away.
Yeah.
Because it was mixed up. And then people would play with my Wikipedia page.
Oh,
do people play with your Wikipedia page?
Oh, yeah.
Page?
Oh, I've been dead 3 times. Honestly. You know, and it's weird that day because you see that Chris Jericho born November 9th, 1970, died, you know, May 12th, 2015. And it's funny, you know, I'll always retweet it or like, I'm dead. Hi, guys.
Yeah.
But for that day, can you imagine if someone actually wrote that and actually got hit by, you know, a Zamboni or something like that?
Right, right.
You know, in the middle of Florida, which would be really weird.
I love Canadian words like Zamboni. Zamboni is so great because, like, if you're American, you like you don't hear that word that much. So every time you hear it, it makes you laugh.
Yeah, well, it's a funny word. Yeah, exactly. Last question. What kind of a haircut are you going to get today?
I'm going to – you know, the thing is my image, a lot of people think I'm like Fabio.
Fabio,
what's his name?
Either one.
They love me. The women love me with long hair.
Yeah.
But I call it my mane.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of just grows straight up, this mane.
Yeah, it's bad. Yeah. I got to keep it short and to the point. That's what I'm going to go for today.
Get any color in there? You're just going to leave it natural?
My hair is naturally colored, so I've got the salt and pepper thing that you see going on is real.
Okay.
You know, certainly I have lifts in my shoes. That I'm not going to lie about.
But the hair is real.
Well, you know how tall I am. My friend calls me Cinco de Mayo because I'm 5'5" and a half. That would be my wrestling name.
Cinco de Mayo. Luchador. Andy, you're a blast, man.
Oh, this was fun. I'm looking forward to this.
I'm glad we got to do this. It's so funny because we worked together on Bobby Chris Jericho and then again on
at midnight. Yeah.
Which was, you were the first one eliminated. I think they made you disappear.
Yes.
But your jokes were far funnier than
it was fun. I mean, I still find that show confusing. It was confusing to do. Have you done it again?
I haven't done it since.
Yeah.
I was the champion that night.
Right.
They haven't brought me back.
Neither
yet.
One of us have gotten a call.
Yeah, yeah. We're waiting for that call. Please. Maybe Jameson can help us out, the original.
Thanks for having me, man. This
Thanks,
was fun.
Brother. All right. The ridiculous Andy Kindler is hosting the alternative comedy show at the Just for Laughs Comedy Festival in Montreal, Quebec, Canada this weekend. He's also bringing his off-the-wall alternative comedy lineup to JFL 42 in Toronto from September 27th to October 1st. Toronto is where we filmed, but I'm Chris Jericho. So if you want to check out Andy live and you live in Toronto, September 27th to October 1st, JFL 42, and go on YouTube and watch But I'm Chris Jericho to see the really funny chemistry between Andy and myself. I play Chris Jericho. He plays Phil Blank, the leader of the Fill in the Blank talent agency, and he's a blast. So thanks to Andy for his time. Very, very funny. And if you haven't seen, But I'm Chris Jericho, go check it out. But also mark your calendars as well. Today was a great podcast. But on March 15th, 2017, it's the biggest podcast ever. That's when Mick Foley joins Talk is Jericho, his Talk is Jericho debut. The countdown has begun, 230 days and counting until the biggest podcast ever. Yeah, and speaking of big podcasts, please go check out Conan's podcast, Keeping It 100, on the Jericho Network. It's tearing up the iTunes charts, the latest blockbuster podcast hit at podcast1.com via the Jericho Network. If you haven't downloaded it yet or subscribed, what are you waiting for? Go to iTunes and hit the subscribe button on Keeping It 100 right now. And I'm telling you, the third episode is very, very funny. Juventud Guerrera could be one of the funniest, unintentionally funniest guys I've ever met, especially on radio. And Conan has him dialed in down pat. Teddy Hart, another completely lunatic guy, hilarious. Disco Inferno, Conan, great chemistry. It's a very, very funny show, and I'm very proud to bring it to you, the very first podcast on the Jericho Network via Podcast One. Go check it out now, and do the same for Talk is Jericho if you haven't already subscribed at iTunes, and leave a 5-star rating and leave a review. I know you guys love podcasts, so now you get TIJ twice a week and Conan once a week. What could be better? Stick with me. I'm going to bring you some of the best podcasting hosts in the world on the Jericho Network. They are coming, I promise. I got a lot working here right now. So Conan, huge hit. Go be a part of the sensation and stay tuned for more podcasts on the Jericho Network. And thanks to you guys also for supporting the great Talk is Jericho sponsors. Thanks to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. You'll get 20% off anything you purchase for a limited time, including the new collector's edition of the Resurrection of Jake the Snake documentary. It's must see. Also audible.com. Once again, audible.com/Jericho. Start your 30-day trial and get a free audiobook. You can get a free Best in the World at What I Have No Idea if you want. And also TrueCar, the cheapest, fastest way to buy a new car. And to the OG sponsor, Amazon. Easiest way to support this show. Please use my Amazon links anytime you do any online shopping. All my links are at podcast1.com. Just click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button. Amazon links for USA, UK, Canada, and don't forget, you buy anything you want in there. Go buy anything. There's so much great stuff that you can pick up and you can check out. How about Andrea Perrin from The Conjuring? Her new book, In a Flicker, is available on Amazon. Go check out that out. It's very, very chilling. A very chilling experience to check that out. But don't, once again, when you buy something on Amazon, become a Talk is Jericho Amazon warrior. Post whatever, take a picture of what you buy, post it on the Twitter at Talk is Jericho. I will retweet it and I'll follow you, all right? Remember, no hidden fees, extra charges when you use these links. Once again, podcast1.com. Click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button, all right? All wrapped up and ready to go. Thank you so much for listening. Keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next and on Friday. Making his podcast debut. Talk about a sensation. How about the guy all the way from Japan that everyone's talking about, Shinsuke Nakamura, will be here making his podcast debut. We worked each other in Tokyo, had a hell of a match, and then a hell of a conversation. He can speak very good English, and you're going to find that out. Everyone is going to be talking very soon about Shinsuke Nakamura, just like they're talking about Bayley, just like they're talking about Finn Balor. All of these great guests coming straight from NXT on to Talk is Jericho, and Shinsuke Nakamura will be here on Friday. We will see you then. Sayonara, domo arigatou gozaimashita. Yeah, boy. We No.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
You're listening to Love Advice with Leanne. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Leanne. Longtime listener, first-time caller. Why, in your professional opinion, do you never take my calls off the air?
Is this Carl?
Yep, it's Carl. I mean, we had a few dates. Everything was great, I thought.
Well, you know, when you switch to Geico, you could save a lot of money on car insurance.
Okay, awesome.
You should call them.
I will.
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
It's your last chance to get great holiday savings at Guitar Center. Like a Yamaha portable keyboard, only $79. Add a month of lessons for only $99. Plus the newest and hottest guitars, drums, keys, and more. Exclusive gear you can't get anywhere else. Special financing and gift cards, the perfect present for every musician. So hurry in and find your sound at Guitar Center. Lessons available at select locations only.
Trump's victory. I'm Ed Donahue with an AP News Minute.
It's always a lot of fun when you win. If you work hard and lose, that's not acceptable.
At the White House, President Trump welcomed Republicans from the House and the Senate who passed a bill overhauling the tax code. The president says the middle class will be seeing the effects of this bill very soon.
The typical family of four earning $75,000 will see an income tax cut of more than $2,000. They're going to have $2,000, and that's, in my opinion, going to be less than the average. You're going to have a lot more than that.
The tax overhaul bill also includes a corporate tax cut.
We have companies pouring back into our country, and that means jobs, and it means really the formation of new, young, beautiful, strong companies.
Democrats have criticized the tax package as a giveaway to corporations and the rich. The tax cuts for businesses are permanent under this tax bill, but reductions for individuals and families will expire after a decade. I'm Ed Donahue.